Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Research Talks podcast here from Stopbox with Alan Green and Dan Flynn. So how's the week been for you guys? I know, Alan, you've been away on holiday, so you've been a little bit out of the loop, maybe. But, I mean, from our standpoint, it looks fairly quiet, really. Nothing particularly to report. Dan, do you agree on that?
I agree, yeah. On the individual company front, it has been a little bit quiet, and I wonder if that's because something's brewing in the wider market, because I'm seeing a lot of stuff about the potential for a correction with indexes running so high. I don't want to be a pessimist, but it does feel like they're, you know, given like the amount of money that's going into AI, you're seeing a lot of space stocks just in the US absolutely ramp up. And we've obviously got the war as well. I think there could be potential for a correction. And we've seen Bitcoin fall quite a lot in the last few days. Gold has fallen a bit, but it seems to have stemmed a lot of those losses. So I don't know. I think it's sort of moving forward cautiously at the moment. I'm holding off putting my ISA allowance into the market. And I don't usually try and time the market. So maybe, I mean, what will probably happen is it'll keep going up indefinitely. And
well, that's it. It can keep going, can't it? Until it comes back, it will at some point. You never really know. I mean, obviously, of course, we are end of May now, so traditionally things do get a little bit quieter. Volumes do tend to dry up. But yeah, all we can do is keep an eye on things and see where they go. Right?
Definitely.
Yeah. The underlying thesis of the mining and metal space is still very much intact. And I think everything we're talking about today is indeed in that space. I know we're going to start with Arco. Alan, any comments from you? Or have you been really just enjoying motorbiking around Spain?
Yeah, frankly, I've just been enjoying motorbiking around Spain. it has been very quiet. And that was a bit because obviously, you know, the industry we're in, I keep very, very close to it sort of while I'm away. But it has been quiet, and there is a sense that, yeah, go away in May is very much in play at the moment. But certainly my portfolio, the blue chip stocks, the big ones and the funds are doing exceptionally well. And when there's a big push forward like this, and I saw this over the past 2 weeks, so there's going to be a correction at some point, but it's just part of the market climbing the so-called wall of worry.
Wall of worry.
Yeah. Goes forward, comes back a bit. Yeah. Goes further forward, comes back a bit. And on we go.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so Dan, Arco Resources then. I know you've been speaking to the new CEO there, Rory Harding, quite a bit. Bit of a turnaround story, right? But go on, take us through it.
Yeah, I wanted to take a look at Arco today because it's one of those early exploration stories that has started to get a bit of traction, but I think could still have a lot further to go. I hope so anyway, as I'm a holder. So the stock is up around 70% year to date, but even after that run, we're still talking about a market cap of only around £11 million. And for that, investors are getting two pretty interesting shots on goal. The first is uranium in Namibia, and the second is zinc in Ireland. Both are speculative and both still need drilling success, but they could also create meaningful value if the next phase of work delivers. So let's start with Namibia. Arco's main focus now is its Erongo uranium project. So Namibia is one of the world's key uranium jurisdictions with major deposits and mines already in the vicinity of the project. So the location's good. The timing's decent as well. As we all know, uranium has become a much more important commodity story over the past few years as nuclear power comes back into favor, supplies are tight, and governments are looking for reliable, low carbon baseload energy. So obviously Arco is an early stage uranium explorer rather than a producer. So we need to be careful not to jump too far ahead. It's in the right market, and what it's done recently is important. The company has completed interpretation of its phase one geophysics program across three northern licenses in Namibia. And that work has now defined multiple uranium targets. So there's two main target styles. The first is paleo channel hosted uranium, which is the same style as large nearby proven deposits like Trokopi and Marenica. And I'm sorry to anyone listening for butchering the pronunciation there. And the second style is hard rock uranium, hosted in a type of formation called ULGs. I'm not a geologist, but basically speaking, that's the same broad family of uranium mineralization that underpins major Namibian deposits in the wider Erongo uranium province, such as Rossing, Husab, and Etango. So the key point is this: ARCO isn't now just saying it has ground near uranium deposits. It's defined targets that match the two major uranium styles found in this part of Namibia. And importantly, it's moving to drilling quicker than originally planned. So the first program is expected to be around 1,500 meters of RC drilling on the eastern EPL 8995 license, where there's a paleo channel target that looks particularly attractive. So that drilling has been accelerated to June, or as soon as contractor availability allows. So that's the first major catalyst. And what we're looking for there really is uranium in the holes. Sounds obvious, but I think it's important. As Rory, the CEO, said when I spoke to him, the company wants to see uranium mineralization through the channel fill, enough thickness to matter, and enough evidence to justify more extensive drilling. So the holes should be relatively shallow. So this first program could give ARCO useful answers fairly quickly. And alongside that, the company is also trenching and sampling a large ULG target on the same license. So that target's around 1 kilometer by 700 meters. And the aim there is to strip away the thin surface cover, map the rock, sample it properly, and work out whether it supports a second drill program. And if the results stack up, the plan is to drill around 2,000 meters of RC drilling on that ULG target in the third quarter of the year. So already you've got a clear sequence. You've got trenching sampling, that paleo channel drilling, potential ULG drilling, and more target generation across the rest of the large license pack. The ones that I've talked about today are just a small portion, so there's a lot of potential here. So that's a lot of news flow for a company this size. And that's really the investment point. I mean, at £11 million, ARCO doesn't need to prove up a giant uranium deposit tomorrow to get people's attention. It just needs to show the targets are real, that uranium is present, and that there's enough scale to keep drilling. And if it does that, the market could really start to treat this as a live discovery story. And then there's Stone Park. This is the part of ARCO that some investors may forget about now the uranium story has taken center stage, but it really still matters. ARCO owns just over 20% of the Stone Park Sink project in Ireland. Stone Park already has an inferred resource of 5.1 million tonnes grading 11.3% combined zinc and lead. It also sits next to Glencore's huge Palace Green project, which is one of the largest undeveloped zinc-lead deposits in the world. And the theory here is that Stone Park could be part of the same wider mineralising system. And ARCO's joint venture partner, Group 11, is now drilling again to look into that. A rig was mobilized for a four-hole 2,700-meter program, and that forms part of a much larger planned Stone Park campaign. So while ARCO's main focus is clearly Namibia, Stone Park gives shareholders exposure to a serious zinc exploration story in the background. And again, that's why I think the valuation is interesting, because for $11 million, you get near-term uranium drilling in Namibia, all those additional pipeline of uranium targets, funded work there, and a meaningful carried interest in this big potential at Stone Park. So that doesn't mean this is risk-free. It isn't. It's still exploration. But the setup here is much more active than it was before the company made that pivot into uranium, which was earlier this year, I think. You know, ARCO's gone from being a quiet, overlooked junior to a company with some momentum, and it's got multiple catalysts and two separate routes to a potential discovery-driven re-rate on the way. So that's why I hold a position, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the company puts out over the next, you know, the coming couple of months.
What are you most sort of looking forward to anticipating, Dan? The Stone Park angle, which I think is a bit more hands-off for them, right? Or the uranium in Namibia?
So Stone Park could be huge, but I think now because I think the company's putting, under Rory, the new CEO, the company's putting a lot of emphasis on this uranium. So if they can come out the gate swinging with that first drill program and really hit some decent grades that show that this is worth following up, I think that could be a big moment for this company that starts to see some real interest being generated, particularly given uranium. There aren't that many ways to get exposure to uranium in the UK. I think if they start to look like they have a really good project on their hands, and that's just one part of a much larger license area, then yeah, the upside here could be pretty meaningful.
Well, yeah, of course, Namibia is a good place to find uranium, as well as of course Saskatchewan. I think those are the two almost the two best regions in the world to find, well, for uranium deposits, effectively. So yeah, they're in the right jurisdiction. But I mean, so it's still very much early stage, right? It's still very much pre-discovery.
It is, yeah. I don't want to promise too much here because they are just targets that have been identified through geophysics, and those you don't know what, not geophysics, but like geophysics and exploration. Yeah. So you don't really know what's under the ground until you get the drill bits. I think that's why they call it the truth machine. But it's small, and it's the work's coming. You want to get in these stocks before they start drilling, really, because then you have more leverage to any upside. And that's the case for both of the companies I'm talking about today. They're both approaching drilling. So I like these stories, these small companies that are approaching drilling, because they don't all work. But if you have enough, if you have a lot of them, then, you know, and you're sensible about your positioning, it can be a really good way to make a lot of upside. And I like the team at Arkle, and I like the commodity. And they've got that Stone Park exposure as well. So I think it offers a lot of potential for its current market cap.
Good. Excellent. Well, thank you. One definitely to keep an eye on. So, yeah. Alan, Anglesey Mining, we've spoken about before, but take us through the latest on Anglesey,
sure,
please.
Mark, there's been a considerable amount of restructuring in Anglesey over the past 6 months, which is very encouraging for long-term shareholders, because this is very much a long-term company. So currently trading at just over 4p with a market cap of 2.6 million. Shares have been as low as 2p on the year and as high as 12p. But Anglesey Mining is one of the oldest listed companies on AIM. It was first floated in 1984, believe it or not, and is the 100% owner of the Paris Mountain, that's Paris spelt with a Y rather than an I, the Paris Mountain mine in Wales, which is has been described as demonstrably the largest and most advanced copper project in the UK. Now, the mine is hundreds, if not thousands, of years old. It was the world's largest copper mine in the 1700s. All activity ceased in 1910, and it's kind of come and gone over the years, primarily due to a lot of resistance to mining and of course, developing the project further. But as most people will know, I visited Paris Mountain in December 2022 with the then management team, and also there at the time was the now executive chairman, Jim Williams. And we were shown samples in the core shed, both from the previous drilling that had been undertaken and also the current campaign, where we visited the drill site at the Northern Copper Project. Now, there was an estimate of 16.1 million tons at 1.9% copper equivalent established some time back, and the aim of the additional work was to examine the extensions that had been discovered to areas called the Northern Copper Zone, also the Garth, Daniel, the White Rock and Engine Zones to the existing geological anomalies. Also at the mine, there is a big mine head, a big infrastructure, and a series of sheds, and also potential places for other mining equipment to be stored. But there's also the original open cast mine too, which is very impressive, and this has been used for as film sets over the years. There was a film, Mortal Kombat, a few years ago that was filmed at Paris Mountain. So back to December 2022, drilling work was undertaken, and from those drill holes at the Northern Copper Zone, they were putting some pretty impressive numbers out of the ground. They estimated the Northern Copper Zone had some 9.4 million tonnes inferred at 1.27% copper. So it's well understood that there is an awful lot more potentially waiting there to be discovered than is reflected in any numbers at present. So, of course, the drive is to produce an updated PFS on the site. But progress has been hampered throughout by the debt that's been sitting on the balance sheet. And there's been some £4 million worth of debt. And obviously, when you have that amount of debt, it's very hard to raise any money. And so up until late last year, the company really was more or less on care and maintenance. There was, however, a scheme which was pursued by the then chief executive, Rob Marsden, who is still the chief exec and shortly to step down, a partnership with Re-Energize to produce a system to produce electricity by using the existing shaft to run a liquid up and down the shaft. It's pumped up overnight and then it's released during the day, and the flow of liquid down obviously it generates electricity. That's still very much in plan and will be sort of a progress forward. So the last 6 months have seen some key milestones. Anglesey's largest shareholder is Energold Minerals, 24.4% investor. And on the 11th of December last year, Energold invested a further £350,000 via a warrant exercise priced at 7.6p. On the 25th of February this year, the company announced that £4 million worth of debt had been eliminated in return for the company's holdings in Labrador Iron Ore Mines and also Grangersberg in Sweden, returning to Energold, which allowed the board to focus on its remaining key asset, which, of course, is the Paris Mountain project. At that stage, Jim Williams came in as chairman and has subsequently become executive chairman. And on the 9th of March, the company raised gross funds of £680,000 at 6p. And that also at the same time involved the appointment of a new broker, ALBR Capital, to provide the money from that fundraise. So Jim came in as executive chairman, and then this week we had the long-awaited appointment of the new CEO, Andrew Fulton, who's a chartered mining engineer, was appointed. And he's got quite a history, co-director at Capacity Minerals, that's working in Egypt and Jordan. He was initially ops manager and then vice president at ICL's Boulby polyhalite project in or mine rather in northeastern England. He's also been a director at UK Coal PLC and worked for some 15 years at Anglo American Group. So vastly experienced. Looking forward to getting his feet under the table, but I think also with Jim Williams' experience as well as a PLC director of many years, we're really going to start to see things move now. Jim has the full support of Energold, of course, and Brendan Cahill, who's also a director on the board. So they've already started work to progress and start to get the PFS or start to progress towards the updated PFS. The initial phase of a drone-operated aerogeophysics program has been completed, and the early results from that should suggest that the VMS extensions that I mentioned that were being drilled back in 2022 have been confirmed, and they appear to run further, and they are very much along the lines of the polymetallic mineralization that's already understood to be in place at Paris Mountain. So there is also some geospatial analysis being undertaken, and that should be completed within the next 8 weeks. So we'll have some news on that. But in essence now, I think Anglesey presents a very attractive project for investors into the UK. Obviously, copper is now a critical mineral in the UK, as are the other metals at what is a polymetallic project. So that could mean that we could see Paris Mountain in the not too distant future benefit from some of the non-dilutive funding that's been provided to projects such as the lithium project in Cornwall, Cornish Lithium, and I think if that happens, then we're going to see Paris Mountain really come to the fore, because it is without doubt the UK's largest, certainly the largest in situ copper project. The logistics are very good too. There's there's a road route already been agreed to transport the ore to the port of Holyhead. There's also a jetty being identified at Holyhead where the loading could take place. So it's almost a plug and play project ready to go. And I think now with the management in place, with the balance sheet now cleared, and work already progressing to take the company to the next stage towards establishing an upgraded PFS, we're in a very exciting situation.
Good. Okay. Well, thanks, Alan. Thanks. That's a good comprehensive overview of Anglesey. So thank you for talking to us about that. So, Dan, we're going to go over to a different company now, Austin Metals, over in Australia, who I know you spoke to this week. So this is the first time we're talking about them. Tell us what you've learned.
Yeah, so Austin Metals is a pretty simple opportunity to me. It's got a tiny market cap, a good address, targets to find, and drilling about to start. And like I was saying with Arcle, that's exactly the kind of setup where small explorers can start to get really interesting. So clearly this is still pretty speculative. Austin's not a producer, doesn't have a resource at this stage, and the drilling still needs to prove the story. But with a market cap of only around 3 million Aussie dollars, it doesn't need to prove everything in one go for the market to pay attention. It just needs to show enough in the first drill program, which I'll get onto, to suggest there might be a real gold system here. So the project itself is the Austin Gold Project in Western Australia's Murchison Greenstone Belt. And that matters because the Murchison, it's really a proper gold district. It has a long mining story, long mining history, having yielded around 7 million ounces of gold, I think Mike was saying on my interview. It's got a big remaining gold endowment, and there's a lot of activity around Austin's grounds. The project sits near Remelius Resources' Q Gold project, and it borders Caprice Resources' Island Gold project, which includes the Vadrian's gold system. So the address is good, and in exploration, as we all know, address matters. It doesn't guarantee success, but it does mean Austin is looking at the right kind of rocks in a region where gold systems have already been found. So the main focus of the project right now is the northern zone, and in particular an area called Brunswick Hill. Austin's done a lot of groundwork there. It's used a variety of techniques such as, you know, drone imagery, field mapping, magnetic data, and analysis of multi-element rock chip geochemistry to define multiple BIF-hosted gold targets. Now, BIF just means banded iron formation. These are iron-rich rocks that can be good hosts for gold in this region, especially when they're cut by the right structures. So basically, gold-bearing fluids move through faults and fractures, and when those fluids interact with certain rocks, you can get gold deposition. And that's the model Austin is testing. And it's relevant here because the nearby Caprice project, where they've had success at Vadrian's, that's changed the way people look at BIF-hosted gold potential in this part of the Murchison. It's got a lot of potential. So Austin's not saying yet that it has another Vadrian's, but you know, that would be getting ahead of ourselves. But it is using that regional model to sharpen up its own targets. And that's exactly what you want to see from a small explorer. So at Brunswick Hill, Austin has now identified five priority target areas along roughly 3 kilometres of this prospective BIF trend. Across the broader northern zone, it's mapped more than 12 kilometres of prospective BIF outcrop. And only part of that has been properly tested before. I mean, to me, one of the more interesting points here is that previous drilling may have not tested the best positions at all. Simply put, Austin thinks earlier drilling may have tested the upper part of the system and missed the more prospective BIF position in the footwall. So the upcoming drilling in that sense is not just random. It's designed to test a better geological model with better structural interpretation, geochemistry, and therefore targeting. So that makes the next phase important. Austin's secured a drilling contractor and a 4,000 meter RC program is expected to start in June. The initial focus will be the BIF-hosted gold targets at Brunswick Hill and another area called Mount Sandy. Then two more areas called Ted's and Shadow may follow, subject to approvals and the readiness of final targets. At Mount Sandy, previous drilling has already outlined around 250 meters of continuous gold mineralization associated with quartz sulfide veining. So there is more than one target in play here. But for me, I mean, it seems clear that Brunswick Hill is the main one to watch. With regard to what success would look like, I think quite simply, we're looking, as always, for width, grade, and continuity here. A single narrow hit would be great, and that can get people excited for a day or so. But what investors really want to see is evidence of a system. We want to see gold across multiple drill fences, decent widths, decent grades, and some sign that mineralization can continue along strike or at depth. So if Austin can show that, then this becomes a much more interesting story. The company, importantly, has also strengthened its team ahead of drilling. It's appointed Jeff Willits as exploration manager, and he brings more than 20 years of experience in the Australian resources sector, including the Western Australian goldfields and the Murchison, where Austin is focused. It's also appointed Gary Harvey as a non-exec director. He has around 30 years of Australian mining industry experience in gold, copper, nickel exploration, and he's currently connected to Caprice Resources as a consulting principal geologist. So he knows the area. And I think both of these are key because Austin's at the stage where execution is everything. You need the right targets, you need the drilling done properly, and you need the results interpreted well. To do that, you need the right people to oversee things. So putting it all together, Austin Metals is a tiny gold explorer with a project in the right district. It's next to active and successful neighbours. It's got newly defined targets and drilling's about to begin. So it's a great setup. Like Arkle, it's speculative. You know, the drill bit may not deliver. And even if there is gold, there's going to be likely more work to develop it into a proper discovery. But that is the nature of early stage exploration. The opportunity is getting exposure before the market knows whether the targets work, and at around a 3 million market cap, and that's Aussie dollars, not GBP, the valuation leaves plenty of room for a re-rate if drilling starts to validate the model. So yeah, I'll be looking out for rig mobilization in June, first drilling at both Brunswick Hill and Mount Sandy, then assays, which you'd expect, I don't know, like a month or so after drilling is completed. If those results show the right combination of width, grade, and continuity, like I was talking about, then Austin could start to look very different from a valuation perspective very quickly. So I haven't taken a position yet, but it's on my watch list. And funds allowing, I think this is one that I want to take a punt on.
Ooh. Well, I don't think you say that lightly, Dan, either, do you? So that's good.
No. I it was a good interview with MD Mike Moore. I urge people to watch that if you're interested in what I was talking about. I'm also going to write about the company in the newsletter this week, covering kind of the same points I was there. But like I was saying with Arkle, I like these pre-drill stories where it's high risk, but you know drilling's on the way. You know you're going to get answers in one way, or one form or another soon, don't you? So it's
Moore. I know Mike Moore from.
He works. I think he's at FDR as well.
Ah, yes, he is. He's FDR, of course. Yeah.
That's all.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you for highlighting that to us, Dan. Yeah.
No problem.
Thank you. Okay, well, let's finish off, Alan. You're U Metals.
We've covered the company a few times on the research talks, of course. Dan, you covered it a few weeks back. But there's some interesting developments with the company over the past few weeks, and I think they warrant a closer look. So URU, of course, are the owner of the Zeb Nickel project, which is based in the Limpopo province in South Africa. It's in the northeast of South Africa, close to the platinum mining town of Mokopane. And it's sited within the Bushveld complex, where there are a series of mines. It's a very fertile area for mining, but it's sited between two giant projects. Firstly, the Ivanhoe Platreef project, and secondly, the Mogalakwena mine, which is owned by Valterra. Now, the project has a number of geological anomalies, which have been noted previously, and in fact, a preliminary economic assessment was undertaken in 2012, which indicated resources of some 1.5 billion tons. This was a non-JORC estimate, by the way, at 0.225% nickel. So some drilling was undertaken at that point. Eight holes were drilled over 3,200 meters. And this identified multiple intersections of high-grade mineralization and a total strike zone of around 5 kilometers containing mineralization. So it's already established that this is a huge project with huge potential. And of course, I think the intriguing thing about URU is that it's being sited between these two giants, it's quite likely that if the project is developed to a certain point, then one of these two giants may come in and make a bid for the company. URU is currently trading at just over 6p. That gives it a market cap of £6.5 million sterling. Shares have traded as high as 13p on the year and as low as 2.5p. But I think at the 6.5 million market cap, that's a derisory figure for what is potentially in the ground. And there have been a number of surveys undertaken this year, largely off the back of a publication in February this year, which was a peer group publication or a publication that appeared in the Geological Society of America's Journal of Geology. This article provided third-party support and some new technological insights into processes that promote sulfide saturation, and in particular, nickel sulfide mineralization in the district. The article concluded, the article conclusions very much dovetailed into the existing interpretation of some earlier airborne and ground survey data sets that have been obtained by URU. And of course, all this took place after the company raised a substantial amount of money late last year. It raised 1.1 million at 7p. And we've also seen some institutional interest in the company too, which obviously indicates that there's some real potential there. But it's work and publications like this that really I think put flesh on the bones of what's potentially under the ground. So in April, the company announced a ground-based gravity survey had been completed. And this provided enhanced resolution of the existing airborne data sets. And of course, it further helped to define drill targets into what is a semi-massive nickel sulfide, or a series of semi-massive nickel sulfide bodies, again, over that strike area of five kilometers that I mentioned from the 2012 data. The survey also confirmed the presence of coincidental, conductive, and dense targets. And the responses at targets 1 and 2, which have been identified as drill targets, were particularly compelling. So, again, the surveys are all going to confirm and very much on the back of the findings in that peer group publication, that they're going to sort of further confirm and delineate where these targets should be. Most recently, a week or so ago, the company announced ground-based low-frequency domain electromagnetic survey, FDAM, had been completed. This, again, further defined conductive and dense anomaly targets and those drill targets at targets 1 and 2, improved understanding and continuity of prospective mineralized zones, and really has now given the company some very clear drill targets to go after. So, the next step, of course, is to put a drill team in there and the drill machine, as you said, Dan, the truth machine, to get down into the ground. And I think if those results bear out what seems to be there, then I think we're in for a very exciting period. And all of a sudden, this £6.5 million valuation for UAU is going to look very cheap indeed. But of course, that's going to come during the summer, and we expect more news from that in the coming weeks and months.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you both very much for your time. Let's see what next week brings, see if we have super hot weather, see what the markets bring, but we're very firmly into June. So, yeah, we'll have to see how it goes. It could be could be flatlining for a bit, but we'll keep an eye on it and we'll see what's going on. So unless anyone has any exciting plans to tell us about, we can chat next week.
Not really. Just a quiet weekend, I think, guys, but thank you both.
Okay.
Cheers, guys.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter, and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programmes at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.